This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Russia calls for a UN Security Council meeting on a code provocation by Ukrainian radicals in Bucha. This after Kiev accused Moscow of massacre there. Israeli forces attack Palestinians in the occupied East El Quds, wounding a dozen of them and arresting many more. And Sri Lanka's cabinet ministers resign en masse following anti-government protests sparked by a deepening economic crisis. Hey everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Bashar Zanjefi. Good to have you with us. Now, 40 days into the Russian conflict in Ukraine, Russia has focused attack on Ukraine's south and east after withdrawing from areas near the capital, Kiev. Russian air raids hit two port cities in the south, that's Mykolaiv and Odessa. Moscow says an oil refinery and three fuel storage facilities used by Ukrainian forces were destroyed in Odessa. Kiev says the attacks left one person dead and 14 others injured in Mykolaiv. Ukrainian officials also say that 7 people were killed and 34 more wounded after a residential area was hit in the eastern city of Kharkiv. Inside Russia, 2 blasts have reportedly ripped through the city of Belgorod near the border with Ukraine. Meantime, Ukrainian officials say that hundreds of civilian bodies have been found in mass graves in several areas around Kiev, including in the town of Bucha. Kiev says that they've been executed by Russian troops.
Well, that's really hard to describe what we have found in the recently deoccupied territories like Bucha, like Hostomel, like Irpin. These images are really they are heartbreaking. We found mass graves filled with civilians. We found people with their hands and with their legs tied up, if it's, do I say it correctly, tied up, and was shots, was bullet holes at the back of their heads. So they were clearly civilians, and they were executed.
President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Russia of committing genocide. Kiev also urged the International Criminal Court to probe what it calls the deliberate massacre. The UN Rights Office says the discovery of mass graves raises serious questions about possible war crimes. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an independent probe, saying it must lead to effective accountability. The U.S. Embassy in Kiev described the images of Bucha as horrific, while NATO condemned the, quote, brutality unseen in Europe for decades. Russia, however, says its forces did not kill the civilians. Moscow has also asked the UN Security Council to discuss what it says that provocation by Ukraine radicals in Bucha. The Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman says that Kiev's aim of the alleged provocation is to disrupt peace talks and escalate violence. The Kremlin says it's not possible to completely isolate Russia as the West continues piling up sanctions on Moscow over its military operation in Ukraine. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says, quote, it is technologically impossible in the modern world to fully isolate Russia. He says the world is much larger than Europe, adding, sooner or later, quote, we will have to build a dialogue, whether some overseas want it or not. Western capitals have slapped unprecedented economic sanctions on Russia since it moved troops into Ukraine on February 24th. There are also travel bans and asset freezes on a number of government figures, including President Vladimir Putin. Now, we talked to historian and investigative journalist Tony Gosling about the impact of Western sanctions on Moscow, and he believes that such punitive measures remain futile.
We've got the leaders in the West are lying to themselves and to each other that they can actually discipline Russia and discipline Putin by sanctions. And of course, this is never going to work, and it can't work because over many years now, the Russians and other countries that have been sanctioned have actually, in some ways, grown more independent and stronger through those sanctions. And I'm afraid it's indicative of the total lack of reality at the top. Of course, this is something which we who live in Western countries are very well aware of. We've seen complete mismanagement of our economies and the collapse, say, for example, here in Britain, of industries which were just simply allowed to be sold abroad. And we've got a population now which is at the highest poverty level since the end of the Second World War.
Now, that's all we had about for Ukraine. Now, in other news, Hungary's opposition leader, Peter Márki-Erzay, concedes defeat in the country's parliamentary election, but he links the victory of Prime Minister Viktor Orbán's ruling party to its vast propaganda machine.
We recognize their victory. We recognize that in a system like this, whatever kind of election system there would be, whatever kind of election math there would be, the ruling party would have had a strong victory. They would have had a two-thirds victory.
Now, Márki-Erzay's comments came after Orbán declared that his right-wing party has won two-thirds of the parliamentary seats. With 94% of votes counted, official results show Orbán's party leading with around 53%. That's while the opposition alliance has mustered nearly 35% of the ballots. The premier's party is also ahead in single-member constituencies. Orbán, who will lead the country for the fourth consecutive term, has already blamed his opponents for trying to drag Hungary into the Ukraine conflict. He also banned any transport of Western arms to Ukraine via Hungary. The election comes amid rising inflation in the country. Consumer prices there jumped to an almost 15-year high in February. In an effort to remind voters of the past 5 years, scores of Yellow Vest protesters have marched in capital Paris. The first round of France's presidential election is next weekend, with polls showing an increasingly tight re-election for President Emmanuel Macron. Rami Mazahari has more from the French capital.
Exactly 1 week before the first round of the French election, the embodiment of the past 5 years marched in Paris. Yellow vests who were crippled, blinded, and mutilated by police. On every Saturday from November 2018 until June 2019, a national bloodletting took place on a scope which was unprecedented in recent Western history. The numbers are as staggering as the lack of Western condemnation for the French government. At least 11,000 arrests, 1,000 imprisoned, 5,000 protesters seriously hurt, 1,000 critically injured, scores maimed for life, and 11 deaths. Those who suffer the most say they don't want to be forgotten when voters go to the ballot box.
When you're mutilated by the police, there's naturally a lot of suffering and a lot of complications to our daily lives. But we keep our head held up high to show what Mr. Macron has done to his own people.
The huge phalanx of armed police, which still accompany the Yellow Vests every Saturday, kept their distance, while the mainstream media was not present at the protest almost at all.
It is the average citizens who supports us, because we do not even exist to this state or to the justice system. Where there is no police brutality and there are no victims, then how can we exist?
Over 75% of cases involving hurt protesters are immediately dropped without any court case or even an investigation. Punishment of police for mistreating yellow vest anti-government protesters has been almost non-existent.
By denying that there was any police brutality, the government legitimized it. How can we have confidence in a government which cripples its own citizens or in institutions which do not intervene to stop that? It is truly barbaric violence which chose to mutilate people simply because they believe in a better future.
The yellow vests are routinely credited with an approval rating of 75%, an unheard-of score in a country where perceptions of political corruption are commonplace. The state-sponsored police brutality, combined with the so-called anti-yellow vest laws, scared many into no longer attending public protests. President Emmanuel Macron is expected to win a close re-election, but the damage to France's international reputation cannot be estimated. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Now moving on, Israeli forces have intensified crackdown on Palestinians during the holy months of Ramadan. They have attacked fasting people in East El Quds, injuring around a dozen of them, and arresting many more. According to Palestinian media, people were violently attacked as they were gathering for night prayers. Israeli forces reportedly used rubber bullets and tear gas during the attack in front of Damascus Gate in the Old City area. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has denounced the attack, which it says followed a top Israeli official's visit to Damascus Gate. The group calls it a dangerous escalation. At least 10 Palestinians have been killed and dozens more arrested in a week-long Israeli raid across the occupied territory. Last year, during Ramadan, Israeli attacks on Palestinian worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque resulted in 11 days of deadly conflict between the regime and Hamas. Iran's foreign minister says that the U.S. is directly responsible for prolonging talks on reviving the 2015 deal by making excessive demands. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made a comment in a phone call with his Omani counterpart, Saeed Badr al-Busaidi. He said Tehran is ready to reach a good and durable agreement. The top diplomat also slammed new U.S. sanctions on a number of Iranian companies and individuals. Tehran, the remaining sides of the 2015 deal, known as JCPOA, have been engaged in talks in the Austrian capital since last year. Iran has stressed that JCPOA revival depends on the verifiable removal of U.S. sanctions and guarantees that Washington won't abandon the accord again as it did in 2018. Yemen says it's committed to a UN-brokered ceasefire with the Saudi-led coalition as long as the other side does the same. According to the UN Special Envoy for Yemen, all offensive military operations, including ground, aerial, and naval attacks by the two sides, have been stopped for a two-month period. Abdul Latif Al-Washal reports.
As Yemenis are marking the holy month of Ramadan, a new truce was announced by the United Nations Special Envoy for Yemen to help the humanitarian situation in the country. The parties agreed to a nationwide ceasefire for 2 months, in addition to suspending all sorts of aerial attacks from both parties.
The international community has become convinced that this unjustified and barbaric aggression against the Yemeni people must be stopped, and the violations and crimes left by the war are a disgrace to the international community. There are indications of the continuation of the truce, and we hope that it will be the beginning of a complete end to the war and the lifting of the siege on Yemen so that we can confront the humanitarian crisis.
The agreement includes opening Sana'a Airport for 2 flights a week from and to Egypt and Jordan only, and allowing Yemen's fuel ships to arrive at Hudaydah Port. However, observers say this agreement is the result of the recent attacks of Yemen's armed forces against Aramco facilities across Saudi Arabia.
I think, of course, those latest attack against Saudi Arabia and as well in the last few months against United Arab Emirates, it has forced Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates to accept this truce. But it will be really clear in the coming days and week, will they accept this and will they, because there have been many like agreement that has been signed as an example in Stockholm. But still at that time, because Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates were not part of this agreement, they have not signed and they were not mentioned in any of those agreements. That's why they have actually not respecting them.
In addition to the war, Saudi Arabia has been tightening the all-out blockade it imposes on Yemen and has prevented Yemen's fuel ships to enter the country. This has worsened the situation in war-torn Yemen, which is already going through the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the UN.
Despite the tragic humanitarian situation of their country, Yemenis say there has always been light despite all
before the darkness. They believe the UN brokered agreement may lead to a comprehensive political solution as the Saudi war must come to an end. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
China has given one of its biggest ever public health responses to the COVID outbreak. The government sends the military and thousands of healthcare workers into Shanghai to help execute COVID tests for 26 million residents. The Chinese army has dispatched more than 2,000 of its medical personnel to Shanghai. Estimates say that 10,000 healthcare workers have also been sent there. Shanghai has reported more than 9,000 new COVID cases Sunday. China's most populous city is grounded to a halt after the government locked it down last week. The measure is aimed at stopping an outbreak of the highly transmissible Omicron variant that started more than a month ago. The mass resignations in Sri Lanka. Cabinet members have resigned following escalating anti-government protests and a deepening economic crisis. 26 ministers submitted their letters of resignation on Sunday. President Gotabaya Rajapaksa and the Prime Minister did not resign. They are set to introduce a new cabinet soon. They have invited all political parties to join the government and find a solution to the country's economic meltdown. Sri Lanka is currently under a state of emergency. The security forces are bracing for potentially violent protests. Access to the majority of social media platforms has also been blocked. Sri Lanka is witnessing its most powerful downturn since gaining independence from Britain in 1948, with severe shortages of food and fuel, record inflation, and mounting foreign debts. The President of Pakistan has dissolved the parliament after Deputy Speaker of the National Assembly blocked a vote on a no-confidence motion against the Prime Minister. Prime Minister Imran Khan termed the ruling of the Speaker a victory for Pakistan as he believes that this has defeated foreign-backed efforts to topple his government. Kamran Yusuf reports.
It was a day of high drama and surprises in Pakistan. The country's parliament was to vote on a no-trust move against Prime Minister Khan. But the Deputy Speaker blocked the vote by ruling that the opposition's move was part of an international conspiracy against the government. Within minutes, Prime Minister Khan appeared on national television and dissolved the parliament.
President Sahib ko.
After the ruling of the Speaker, I have advised the President to dissolve the assemblies. And in democratic society, change must come through elections. People, not the foreign powers, should decide who they want in power.
Awam se elections ho.
Khan claims he was being ousted from power by the US for pursuing independent foreign policy. But opposition parties have rejected the move and termed it a violation of the constitution.
Banana republic.
The government has tried to show that Pakistan is a banana republic. Pakistan is a growing democracy, and we will not allow anyone to violate the constitution.
Khan came to power in 2018 and promised to bring reforms in the country. Opposition accused him for failing to deliver on his promise and hence wanted to seek his ouster. But the Speaker's move to reject opposition's vote of no confidence has triggered a constitutional crisis in the country.
The focus has now shifted from the parliament to the Supreme Court of Pakistan. The country's highest court will decide whether the Speaker's ruling and subsequent decision by the Prime Minister to dissolve the parliament is constitutional or not. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terence fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee. The facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The unique days of the blessed month of Ramadan provide the best opportunity for worship of God. This month is a very good period for gaining spirituality and purity of heart. Today, hedonism prevails among many human societies, as capitalist culture and utilitarianism rule in many parts of the world. But the fact of the matter is that various pleasures are all short-lived. That's why those who seek such pleasures end in absurdity and nihilism. Alas, man typically does not pay attention that there are pleasures which never end or decline. These are the pleasures which are attained through faith in God as the creator of the worlds. Worship of God creates such kind of pleasure that surpasses all other kinds of material pleasures. Great source of emulation, late Grand Ayatollah Muhammad Taqi Behjat Fumani had said, "Had the kings and oppressive rulers perceived the sweetness of worship of God, they would have abandoned all mundane pleasures and would have never been content to replace it with anything else." Dear friends, it should be heeded that spiritual pleasures and sweetness of worship is not easy to achieve. All the faithful fast in Ramadan and try to do good deeds, but not everyone is able to taste the sweetness of worshiping of God. By the way, why do we not take pleasure in worship? This pleasure is the reward of those who do righteous deeds and worship God with sincerity and purity of intention. Purity of intention means discharging the heart from any love except the love of God. The love of wife, children, social position, power, wealth, money, etc. hinders the way of God's love. It does not mean that we should abandon our family, house, job, and friends. It rather means to love everyone and everything for the sake of God and in the way that God is pleased with. He who seeks God's satisfaction will neither be happy with properties, wealth, and power, nor will he be sad with poverty, failure, and sickness. He's pleased with whatever God has granted him. We should try our best to have a good life with self-reliance, but we should trust in God and what He disposes. God has made Ramadan the reason of worship so that our souls and hearts flourish and spiritual flowers grow in individuals and society. Let us experience pure worship in the blessed month of Ramadan. I mean, we can perform daily ritual prayer with a tongue that has not been polluted with backbiting, gossiping, insult, calumny, and other sins. How beautiful is to recite the Quran with the eyes that have refused to look at forbidden sins. How nice is to spend with the hand that has not wronged anyone. We human beings constantly face our carnal desires and myriads of sins in our journey towards God. Sometimes the heart is polluted by sins and evil deeds. This makes it difficult to wash those pollutions. But the blessed month of Ramadan is a good opportunity which makes it easy to move in the way of God and to compensate for the past mistakes and sins. God has facilitated the way through fasting which chains the unruly self. Worships, prayers, and supplications act as assistance for man to move more easily in this way. Indeed, those who make use of the opportunity of Ramadan are the true faithful. They try to gain a spirituality in Ramadan and make effort to keep this spirituality till the next Ramadan. The moment at which we control ourselves and suppress carnal desires, we are marching in the way of God and distance ourselves from Satan. This is easier in the month of Ramadan because, according to the Prophet of Islam, devils are chained in this month. Dear listeners, some of the heavenly books have been revealed in the month of Ramadan. The scriptures of Abraham were revealed on the first night of Ramadan. On the sixth day of this month, Prophet Moses received the Torah in the Mount Sinai. The Evangel was sent down to Prophet Jesus on the 13th of the month. And finally, the Noble Quran was sent down to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, in the night of Qadr, which falls in the third part of the month. This is the reason why recitation of this book in Ramadan brings about a special spirituality and luminosity for the faithful. Great exegete of the Quran, Ayatollah Abdullah Javadi Amuli, says, "The blessed month of Ramadan is the month of God's banquet, as man is God's guest in this month. In this tablecloth, besides the apparent sustenance that God grants man, other kinds of sustenance are also received by man. The most important sustenance which is granted to servants is the familiarity with the teachings of the Noble Quran and the practice of the leaders of religion, peace upon them. As the Messenger of God has put it, the Quran is not separate from the Ahlul Bayt. One should benefit from both in this month. The Quran is Allah's cord. It has been narrated that one end of the cord is in God's hand, and the other end is in the hands of you humans. Hold it and ascend. This is not a cord that would be broken if 6 or 7 billion humans hold it. This is a firm cord which will not fail to meet the needs of billions of human beings. It answers anyone who has a question and demand. The Quran is the book of life. It is the instruction from God the Exalted for building human to make human being give godly color to his material affairs while regulating and administering them so that he forms his world according to the laws of the inner nature and God's desire and makes it the hereafter in line with God's satisfaction. The Quran guides to the most upright way. Be the guest of this book and benefit from it as much as you can. Recite it and ascend," a reference to the hadith that on the day of resurrection, the reciters of the Quran are called to read the ayahs and go up on the degrees of paradise with every ayah that they read. Do not sell yourselves cheaply.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. On this programme, we will address the most significant issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organisations, the people and also the region as a whole. So, stay with us.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss how Iran, which has for the past four decades been host to one of the largest and most protracted refugee situations in the world, continues to embrace Afghan refugees. And we shall expose the blatant duplicity of Western countries who continue to deport and cold shoulder refugees from Afghanistan.
The hasty and irresponsible exit of US-led foreign forces and Taliban's sweeping takeover in Afghanistan August last year was followed by freezing of Afghan assets worth billions of dollars. It plunged the South Asian country into an unimaginable economic crisis, forcing millions of people to flee their homes and belongings. A large majority of these people took refuge in neighboring Iran, which, unlike the Western countries that occupied and wreaked havoc in Afghanistan for 20 years, warmly embraced the fleeing Afghan refugees.
After the Taliban laid siege to Kabul on August the 15th last year, drawing the curtains on a 20-year-long foreign military occupation, the US and its allies rushed to cut off Afghanistan's access to international aid and froze nearly $10 billion in assets belonging to the country's central bank. The International Monetary Fund and World Bank followed suit. Besides spawning the worst humanitarian crisis in recent history, the situation also displaces millions of Afghans, forcing them to flee to neighboring countries. Hundreds of thousands of Afghans have made their way across the border into Iran in the last 6 months, negotiating the treacherous terrain and braving enormous risks. According to international aid organizations, around 4,000 to 5,000 people are streaming into Iran each day, escaping the horrors of poverty and insecurity fueled by the US and its allies. While many of them come through illegal channels, paying smugglers hefty money, many others have arrived through proper legal channels. Despite the fact that the Iranian economy has been in a tailspin because of crippling US sanctions, the incoming Afghan refugees have been accorded warm reception and provided necessary facilities. Iran's assistance to the war-weary Afghan refugees has been largely without any international aid.
The Iranian approach for Afghan refugees need to be supported. Most of the refugees here are living in the community. You know, this is something that we are actually promoting through the Global Compact. in this particular situation where additional pressure is put on the country and this has repercussions that we all know about, it is more difficult for the government to sustain a policy that is so inclusive in respect of refugees.
While rich Western countries have erected walls to prevent the entry of Afghan refugees, Iran has opened its gates and hearts to them despite the difficult economic conditions in the country. From prioritizing the vaccination of Afghan refugees to providing them equal educational opportunities, Iran's approach to the Afghan refugee crisis has been full of compassion and humanity. Top UN officials have acknowledged the role played by Iran in alleviating the suffering of ill-fated Afghan refugees while urging the world to share the burden.
The domestic political climate in the US and Europe has turned increasingly hostile to asylum seekers from Afghanistan. The new Afghan refugee exodus has caused jitters in Europe, where politicians fear a repeat of the 2015 migrant crisis. On the other hand, Iran, which already plays host to more than 3 million refugees from Afghanistan, has embraced almost a million more in the last 6 months.
The West has always failed the Afghans, you know, whether it's refugees or the Afghan people, you know, they betrayed us in the past and they betrayed us again. They betrayed us in the 80s and 90s and now again, you know, in 2021. They destroyed our country, they invaded our country, they created refugees, and when the time came that Afghan needed help to run away from the Taliban, you know, they shut their borders and then make it so difficult, you know. Even now in Britain, you know, if you're an Afghan and if you arrive on the back of the lorry or if you arrive on a boat or a ship, you know, you might be ending up in prison for up to 4 years, you know, which is totally against the basic international human rights law on asylum and immigration or asylum seekers or refugees. But, you know, the current mess in our country is created by the West. It's the West which is responsible. They went to Afghanistan, invaded our country, and then fought the Taliban for 20 years, the longest war. You know, killed thousands, hundreds of thousands of innocent people by Afghan security forces, by the Taliban, by the Islamic State, by foreign forces. And when the time came, you know, that the Afghan needed help, you know, the West shut everything on their faces and abandon and betray the Afghans.
Ivo Friesen, UN Refugee Agency's representative in Iran, recently admitted that the amount of assistance provided by international organizations to address the needs of Afghan refugees in Iran was small, and most of the support was coming from the Iranian government and people. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian, in his meeting with the UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi in Tehran mid-December, described the agency's assistance to Iran woefully insufficient. The lack of assistance from the international community, however, has not deterred Iran from embracing Afghan refugees. Iran's Health Minister Bahram Einollahi, in his remarks recently asserted that Afghan refugees were given health services, including COVID-19 vaccines, on a par with Iranian nationals. Afghan refugees also avail opportunities to enroll in schools and universities on scholarships. The process to ease visa rules for Afghan nationals is also underway. All this bears testimony to Iran's humane refugee policy, unlike the West.
The blockade of Afghan assets by the US and its allies has precipitated the worst humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. At the same time, US sanctions on Iran have created huge impediments in the way of the Islamic Republic's ability to assist the fleeing Afghan refugees. Both Iran's foreign ministry as well as the country's mission to the UN Security Council have sounded the alarm, urging the world community to share the burden of Afghanistan's refugee crisis, which they helped create in the first place.
While Iran has, in line with its refugee policy, provided necessary assistance to refugees coming from Afghanistan, it has continued to remind the international community of its responsibility toward the people displaced by the 20-year-long failed military adventure of the US and its NATO allies. Iran's envoy to the UN, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, speaking at a UN Security Council session on Afghanistan on January the 27th, asserted that Tehran had done all in its power to support Afghan refugees over the past four decades, despite harsh sanctions. He said that financial constraints due to U.S. sanctions were impeding Iran's efforts to assist incoming refugees in the absence of international assistance. He further noted Iran had kept its borders with Afghanistan open to ease both the people's movement and trade after the Taliban takeover last year.
Always, you know, the West have this weapon, you know. Sanction is very easy for the West, you know, when you launch an illegal war, you know, and then you fail, you know, you have no strategy. And then you empower the most vicious warlords and drug lords and rapists and thieves, bandits, you know, and corrupt people, you know, in Asian countries. And then when the time comes to take your responsibility and say, look, you know, I got it wrong and I'm sorry, and apologize to the people. That's how, you know, the West is famous for. You know, they go to a country, they sanction them, they invade them, they destroy their infrastructure. And then, you know, the poor people pay the price. You know, sanction always, you know, whether it's in Yemen or Afghanistan or Iran or, you know, some other countries, you know, or Cuba, you know, it kills innocent people. You know, it doesn't kill the rich because the rich have the money. They have the resources. They can move around anywhere they want, you know. But it's the poor, especially the women and children who pay the heavy price. And they're the victims of you know, fail, you know, wars, you know, like in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and you know, in Sudan, in Somalia, and so many other countries.
Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, during his meeting with the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres in Munich, echoed same concerns, stressing the need for continued humanitarian assistance to Afghans while calling for greater assistance by the UN Refugee Agency to Iran. The top UN official, for his part, commended Iran's generosity for hosting millions of Afghans while calling on the global community to collaborate in managing the unfolding crisis.
Of nearly 6 million Afghan refugees, almost 90% are hosted by Afghanistan's two closest neighbors, Iran and Pakistan. Iran alone is home to more than 3 million Afghan refugees. Before the latest refugee exodus triggered by the botched U.S. exit, Iran has for the past four decades been host to one of the largest and most protracted urban refugee situations in the world. According to aid agencies, around 4,000 to 5,000 refugees have been entering Iran each day in recent months through informal border crossings.
Iran, which is home to around 1 million documented and 2 million undocumented Afghan refugees, shares a 572-mile porous border with the neighboring country. Its refugee policy has been consistent since the 1979 Islamic Revolution, providing safe refuge to people fleeing war and persecution. The Norwegian Refugee Council, an independent humanitarian organization providing assistance to refugees across the world, has commended Iran for welcoming and hosting millions of displaced Afghans for the past four decades. In a statement recently, the organization called on the international community to step up to support Iran and urged rich nations to both ramp up aid and keep their borders open to people fleeing conflict and persecution.
It has been commendable that Iran has been hosting refugees primarily from Afghanistan for more than 40 years now, which is an important feature, an important achievement, and a commendable achievement. It also means that as UNHCR, with other international partners, we see it as our task to continue to try and give as much support to the authorities in these efforts for as long as refugees are here, with, of course, the ultimate solution being that Afghanistan becomes stable, fully stable, so that people can go back in safety, voluntarily, and with dignity. Iran has done very well over the years in making basic social services accessible for refugees. This is what we would like to see, what the international norm is, that systems are accessible for refugees, basic social services. Education, we all recall the importance of the decree by the leader in 2015, so that Afghan children can now access education services just like any other child in Iran.
The progressive and inclusive policies of the successive governments in Tehran have ensured that refugees are provided equal access to education, health and livelihood opportunities. According to estimates, more than 96% of Afghan refugees live in Iranian cities, towns and villages alongside their Iranian host communities, while 4% are put up in more than a dozen settlements managed by the Interior Ministry in collaboration with the UN Refugee Agency. Iran has acceded to both the 1951 UNHCR Convention and its 1967 Protocol, which define the legal status of refugees across the world.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Mr. Mustafa Ariyayi at Covert Action magazine. First of all, welcome to the program, Mr. Ariyayi. Now, at a time when Western countries are closing their doors and deporting Afghan refugees, Iran has openly embraced them. Now, what is your take on this contrast in refugee policies?
Well, I totally agree. As your question presupposes, there is indeed a difference in policy. We often hear from Western politicians and the Western media, mainstream media rather, how they brag about human rights and how they try to be bound by the rule of law. And that certainly does apply to refugees or those people who are subjected to inhumane situation and therefore have to fled their country. But the reality, unfortunately, is sometimes very different. Iran, I personally want to thank the Iranian people and on behalf of so many Afghans who have sought refuge in a brother nation like Iran. And Iran for the last decade has accepted and openly embraced millions upon millions of Afghanis, helpless Afghanis, people who were forced to leave their country because there was a political crisis, there was even war. And you know, after so many years, unfortunately, the situation in Afghanistan has only exacerbated ever since. But still, for the Iranian nation, they felt the obligation made itself felt to help their neighbor. And for that, I really want to thank them. Unfortunately, on the part of the Western world, the problem is that they always have a narrative. But that narrative doesn't necessarily line up with the reality. And the Afghan refugee issue is certainly a manifestation of that, where you see that a lot of Western countries are very adamant and even trying to refrain themselves from accepting so many Afghanis. But that is somehow very weird because in the first place, it was Western countries that has contributed to the situation as such in Afghanistan. And then to say that we should have a closed-door policy towards Afghanis, that is a bit rich, to say the least.
Now, as we've seen, Iran has for the past four decades been host to one of the largest and most protected refugee situations in the world. Now, is it fair to say it's time for the world to step up and share the burden as well?
I totally agree with that. I think Iran, neighboring countries in particular, and most notably Iran, has always stood by the Afghan people by and large, even in the midst of a war. I remember, many Afghans remember it very well when there was the 8 years war between Iraq and Iran. Even at that very point, Iran accepted openly so many Afghans. And Iran alone, given its current financial situation, cannot handle the problem, of course. Where the Western world, you see a lot of right-wing politicians and leftists. There is a battle between them in terms of how to regulate the migrant crisis. But they really take an issue when it's about 10,000 refugees or accepting 10,000 refugees on an annual basis. But Iran has already hosting millions upon millions of Afghanis, and I think it's absolutely time to have a frank discussion about that and to accept the fact that Iran indeed alone and also a country like Pakistan cannot bear the burden alone anymore.
Now, another important fact is that Iran has been providing assistance to Afghan refugees without any substantial international support and in the face of the crippling U.S. sanctions. Now, how do you see this?
Yes, I was already alluding to that issue of the financial situation in Iran, and those crippling U.S. sanctions has largely contributed to the situation as such in Iran. It has not only affected ordinary Iranian people, but as an extension, also many Afghanis or many other refugee groups residing in Iran. And I personally believe that the illegal U.S. sanction or Western sanction imposed upon the Iranian nation should come to a speedy and unconditional end, as Iran is doing everything at its end of the bargaining table. Iran has complied with the norms established by the IAEA within the framework of the IAEA, and everything what they do lines up with the NPT. So there is no reason to prolong the sanctions, illegal sanctions rather, against Iran. And in addition to that, it was the U.S. who unilaterally decided to exit the agreement with Iran. I think that yes, the sanctions against Iran are not only hurting the Iranian people, but also to a very large extent Afghani refugees. And it would be very good if the sanctions would come to an end.
Mr. Arya, do you think the unfolding Afghan refugee crisis can be managed if the U.S. and its international partners unfreeze Afghan assets and facilitate aid to the crisis-stricken country?
I think it would give some space to breathe again, but on the long run, I think there much more is needed, of course. This is a humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan, and it's unknown in scale. So I think that on the long run, much more should be done than only unfreezing Afghan assets. In addition, I think that Afghanistan strongly needs a regional solution rather than an international one. It would be a very good start, but it's not everything.
Sir, as we know, the latest Afghan refugee exodus was triggered by the botched U.S. military exit from Afghanistan last August. Now, is it fair to say that the Americans owe reparations to these displaced Afghans?
I think they do. Oh, yes, absolutely. Like I said in the introduction, we're talking about a crisis that they, I'm alluding to the West. They have started the crisis in Afghanistan in the first place. They went into Afghanistan under false premises, by the way. The hijackers of 9/11 attack were not even Afghanis. So, but, you know, by the operation of international law, they somehow knew how to justify the so-called war against terror. But 20 years after, we saw what kind of a detrimental effect it had on many Afghans. I think that the United States does owe reparation to not only to displaced Afghans, but to Afghanistan as such. So they actually left the Afghan people alone, and they couldn't care what would happen with the Afghan people.
Mr. Arya, thank you for being on the program again. Now let's see how people have reacted on social media.
There's one from Ivo Friesen himself, that's a UNHCR representative in Iran, who stresses the importance of the international community coming together to share responsibility with Iran in hosting Afghan refugees. Susan Naimi is an Afghan-American activist who says, The U.S. and Europe are in no position to criticize Iran and Pakistan, who have been taking in Afghan refugees despite the COVID-19 pandemic and U.S. sanctions. We've got a comment from a Bristol-based social worker, Ozgul Gochen, who commends Iran for hosting millions of Afghan refugees despite crippling U.S. sanctions, calling on the world community to pay its historical debt to Iran. Filippo Grandi, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, thanks Iran for including Afghan refugees in its COVID-19 vaccine campaign, praising the country for its inclusive policies and services. The Norwegian Refugee Council Secretary General Jan Egelin tells a British newspaper that more people have been crossing the Afghanistan-Iran border every day than those accumulated altogether on the border of Poland and Belarus.
And that was our episode about the unfolding Afghan refugee crisis and Iran's humane, compassionate response to it. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take good care.
In the limelight. An Iran.